Good morning, everybody. I'm John Galbraith, and I'm pleased to introduce our speaker today for Advancing Pedology in the 21st Century, a colloquium. And first of all, I'd like to give you just a quick background on that. A colloquium is different than a lecture in that this is supposed to be interactive. So Toby is expecting you to ask questions during his talk. Not interruptions, but questions. And he may ask you questions as he's talking as well. The second thing that's different about a colloquium is that this is a relaxed talk. This is a discussion. At the end of this, there will be time for maybe 15 minutes worth of time for questions. That's meant to be a dialogue between you and the speaker. And then afterwards, Toby, I hope, will be around for the business meeting. And there'll be more time for interaction with the speaker after the questions are over. And I think that's what makes a colloquium different than just a straight lectureship. So please make it a discussion, and Toby will do the same. So I should have now introduced the speaker, and this is Anthony O'Gene.
Yes, O'Gene.
Toby, please.
And Toby is what we call him. And he is a soil resource extension specialist at UC Davis in Sacramento and has been since 2002. And essentially his specialty is application of soil-landscape relationships to address issues dealing with agronomic productivity, environmental quality, and natural resource management. And his emphasis has been interactive online soil survey delivery and decision support tools. And you're very much familiar with SoilWeb, and I'm sure you're going to hear more about that today. Toby was vice chair of the department temporarily. He is the chair of the Soils and Biogeochemistry graduate student group. And that's a very active group. I think of it like a think tank. I mean, that was my impression, but Toby took a group of students and he met with congressmen and talking about the importance of soil for vineyard production, and got an audience with over 20 congressmen and their staff. Now, I think that's pretty impressive. Toby was also 2012 NCSS Cooperator of the Year, so he's been very active. And now he's going to share some of his visions and some of his experiences. And his partner is Dylan Baudette. And so I'm sure you're going to hear a lot about Dylan and their cooperative work together. So, Toby?
Thanks, John. Can you guys hear me okay? Yeah. Thank you for inviting us. You know, on behalf of Dylan and I, Dylan is sorry that he couldn't attend this. He's really a big part of the brains behind this operation, and we're both grateful for this opportunity. You know, we jumped at it when we got the invitation to talk about our vision for the future, and then quickly realized, uh-oh, we haven't really considered a comprehensive vision for soil survey in the future. We've always had our pieces that we've thought of that are important, but putting together a more comprehensive vision was a challenge. It was actually a very rewarding experience, and so hopefully I can convey that to you today. And again, like John said, happy to entertain questions as we go. If I can think of questions while I'm going, I'll try to call you guys out. By the way, on that Congress thing, just as a note, we called it Soils, Wines, and Vines, and we took glasses of wine. We had wines from different places across California, and we put the soils in the wine glasses and paired the soil glass with the wine glass. And, you know, interestingly, the way in which you evaluate wine is there are a lot of similarities in terms of texture, structure, sensory conditions, and components. So it was a really natural pairing, and we had meetings with about 20 congressmen and women, and then we had this display for over 200 staffers and congresspeople, so it was a huge, huge success. To be honest, I didn't go. I only organized the group and paid for them to go, but it was a huge success. The students were remarkable, and I think they did it again this year with California, Oregon, and Washington. So, you know, I think I mentioned this in my talk yesterday, and I have to say, it was really nice to be in that, the session yesterday where we were visioning for the future of soil survey, mainly because we have a lot of similar ideas, the speakers that presented, and that's encouraging, and I want you to know I didn't steal your ideas. I had these slides already in place, but there are a lot of similarities to what was discussed yesterday. I feel, and I know Dylan does also, feel strongly that, you know, the key to the future of soil survey, sustaining it, is having a strong advocacy group, people that are behind soil survey, support what it does and delivers and the information it delivers. And, you know, we need to be mindful that our stakeholders, our clientele base, I think we realize this, it's changing, right? You know, at the beginning of soil survey program, it was mainly our clientele base was in rural communities working the land. But now that constituency has changed. It's mainly in the urban environments where the people are. And so I don't think we could ignore that fact. We need to make sure that we're relevant to that group. And so when we were visioning that issue and the whole issue of sustaining soil survey for maintaining it for the future, we kind of came up with four overlapping themes, and they do overlap, and we'll probably talk about them in groups, and that is to make this relevant, this product, or continue to make it relevant to the future and the client, we need to really pay attention to uncertainty of the product. We need to be transparent of that uncertainty. And we need to be mindful of the resolution of that product. Our clients, in many cases, need material that is of finer resolution. Some clients need stuff that is coarser resolution, but transparent in the way in which that material, that product is made. That material has to be relevant to the user. And that's, I think, everyone can relate to the importance of that. The materials we produce, the interpretations we produce, have to be informing the modern problems of society today. And then we have to make sure that the intrinsic value of soil is understood by that clientele base. And so these are the themes that I'm going to try to organize this talk around. I'm going to go back and forth between I and we, but this is a team effort between Dylan and I. Forgive me if I say I. So, you know, this is just a graphic showing, you know, the relationship between resolution and uncertainty, showing our current soil survey products, StatsGo, Surgo, and various disaggregated Surgo derivatives. And you can see that, you know, we have a variety of scales, and these products encompass a variety of inherent uncertainty. And so what we're shooting for in the future is, I guess what we vision is a more seamless set of products that bridge multiple scales and which we can minimize that uncertainty, but recognizing that there are practical limits to how much uncertainty we can minimize. And so the idea is that uncertainty is always going to be present in soil survey products. Let's just make it very clear and transparent to the user. And so, you know, our future soil survey products, if you think of upscale products, one idea would be to generalize a new StatsGo product from Surgo, and other ideas are to downscale Surgo with raster data sets. I think it's important to realize that there are three things that we need to consider when we're creating these new projects. First of all, we need more data, right? And I think we can all agree to that. There's not enough data available. We need to rethink the data we have and consider it more carefully. And we need to make sure that we integrate the soil landscape model in all of our future products. That soil landscape model is really the key to understanding and the key to transparency of products in the future and in products that we have now. And so this is a graph here that just kind of talks about that first step. Let's look at the existing information that we have. This is a plot showing the number of lab pet-ons per series from the KSSL laboratory, and that's on the x-axis, and the proximate acres of that per series on the y-axis. And then the red marks represent the percentiles of the data. And what you can see here is that there's over 50,000 data points here. You can see that we have a lot of data. I don't think I have a pointer. We have a lot of soils with less than 9 or less than 10 per 10 pet-ons that have been quantified. 90% of the data has less than 10 pet-ons sampled. And some of those, 10% of those pet-ons, have 10,000 acres, or more than 10,000 acres in extent, almost a million acres in many cases in extent. So we have these soils groups that occupy vast areas, and we have very little supporting data. And so that quadrant in the upper left is an area that we really need to focus on in terms of considering that data. And I think what we want to focus on here is to kind of consider, well, some of these soils, these series, are being extended over wide, wide areas, pushed to their limits. In contrast, we have some soils that are very limited acreage, that are probably very similar to other soil series. And so there is some disaggregating and some aggregating procedures that we might want to look into so that we could do more with the data that we have, is the point I'm trying to make. And so I think that's the first step in terms of creating products with higher resolution and less uncertainty, is just really taking a careful look at the data we have and carefully looking at those labels, those series names, and understanding what they mean. And so we do have the tools to do that. This is some of the work from Dylan's PhD thesis, AQP, I always get that acronym mixed up. But it's these algorithms in R that allow us to look at one to infinite number of soils in 3D to classify those and to constrain the soil properties and the horizonation, anything that we so choose, where the database reflects, in three dimensions. So we can, in these graphs here on the left, show you the probability of various horizons as we're going down with depth in that soil profile. And then you're able to set quantitative limits on how we might envision a new series with some uncertainty as to where these horizons are coming, acceptable level of uncertainty as to where these horizons are coming in and out with depth. So it's a way in which we can look at multiple soils and set some level of uncertainty and apply quantitative techniques to predict and understand the variability of soils and to group soils in a quantitative way. And so, I don't know. I've never tried to correlate soils. Has anyone ever tried doing that without some sort of a program? Okay. Yeah, okay. I'm curious if everyone's, from the soil survey perspective, how do they do that in cooperative soil survey? We pick a representative profile, I assume. How do you group? How do you come up with that decision-making process as to one soil is a series, the other one, well, that's too different, or this is similar enough, it is in this series. That correlation approach is daunting to me, and this is a great approach to do that to set up quantitative, defensible ways in which we can stand behind our decisions. And so I think it's a very valid way to move forward, and a transparent way to move forward. So another idea to kind of reconsider both the resolution and uncertainty of soil maps or of soil survey, I hope I can communicate this clearly, is to rethink the map unit concept. And the way in which I'm thinking about this right now is rather specific. I mean, there's probably a million ways that we can rethink it. Part of that is reevaluating the series that are going into it, or the components that are going into it. But another is, why not remove all our slope classes from our map units? In the future, our delivery products are going to be coupled with digital elevation models. And so, do we need all that spaghetti, all that clutter from map units that have been selected based on a slope class? Could we use the DEM to show that change in slope, and then broaden our map units to more clearly convey the relationships between soils, components, and landscape features? And so what I'm advocating, or we are advocating for, is let's blow up those map units a little bit, get rid of the slope classes, so we're purely looking at soils and maybe phases of soil. 2 seconds, I'll call on you. Underlay that with a raster map that shows the probability of having that class in that location. That's the transparency part. So it's kind of a combination of raster and vector to both try to scale down, but also deliver some uncertainty. Yeah. You know, I don't know either, and it probably does in places, right? They probably do differ, and that's why I think, you know, none of this is going to be done on its own, right? Digital soil mapping is not going to answer this question. Boots on the ground are going to help. Digital soil mapping is going to help. All these tools need to be in place to mainly nail down that soil landscape model. I think that's the key. That is our scaling mechanism, and that is our way to communicate the variation of soils across the landscape. That's a lot of work. You know, in some soil surveys, that soil landscape model, you can walk up to it and you just see it. You know, you see that general soil map, you see the finer, more detailed maps, and you can still see it. In others, you look at it and you say, what on earth? You know, I have no concept. I can't even understand what the concept was. Yep. Yep. Well, I think that would then, the soil map unit would actually become the soil landform, because you're blowing up all the intermediate classes, possibly in places. You know, I think I'm saying that, yes. I don't, you know, yeah, I'm sure there are probably, you know, you put that in practice and you think, oh boy, maybe that wasn't a good idea. But to me right now, it sounds like a good idea. So I'll stick with it for a while until someone tries it. Okay, good. Yeah.
That the way that we're digitally delivering it, adding a raster below the vector, would help important, appreciate the importance of
not on,
something like the slow class.
Well, I'm not going to directly answer. I'm going to indirectly answer your question. I do think it can help because, man, map units are great tools. They were necessary in delivering this information. But have you ever tried to communicate that concept to the public? I mean, they don't care. They, as soon as you start talking about a map unit, you can see they just, their eyes start to gloss over. Yeah, just tell me what my soil is. That's all they want to know. They don't want to be educated on the intricacies of soil survey and what a map unit is. And I think that by kind of blowing it up a little bit and really focusing on what is the probability of finding your soil, that is something that they might relate to a little bit more. But that's not the only step, and I have more slides to talk about other things you asked, and I'll get to that. Well, why so? Why can't I say you have a 75% chance to have the San Joaquin series? They can relate to that, can't they?
Yeah, but then there's still that, and the question's not answered. They don't know what soil is in their backyard.
That is true, and we're going to talk about that. I think I have a slide on that a little later, and there's not an easy solution for that, but we need to strive to get to that.
Sure.
Yeah. But
that we have to give it to them in some format.
I totally understand you.
That's
a great point. And I do have a slide on that a little bit later, but there's no reason why we can't start generate our interpretations with digital elevation models and soil properties, right? We could do that. Well, I think. Yeah. But that's a good point. I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking the same thing when earlier. Yeah, I mean, we are so. Yeah, we are just so afraid of, I think, of giving wrong information that we've shied away from that. I guess I don't know. Yeah. Point. Thanks, Bill. Yeah. And I hope I made my point that it kind of clouds the conceptual model sometimes on a map. Okay, so that was a lot of what we wanted to, the main focus for now on what we wanted to address on scaling and uncertainty. There are two other really important factors, and that's relevance and intrinsic value in soils. This first little topic here actually relates to scaling, too. And I think someone, Scott from Canada, I forgot your last name, I'm not sure if he's here, brought this up in his talk yesterday. And that is to engage clientele with crowdsourcing. I think this is a really valid, great opportunity for us to consider. It's clear we don't have enough point data. Let's start collecting more. Field experiments, simple observations. We can do color calibrated photos, depth to bedrock, soil depth, photos of structure. Daniel talked about that yesterday. Lots of innovative, high-tech approaches that could be implemented, and they could be easily nowadays georeferenced with phones. We can have other classes of people implementing or uploading measured data, a whole suite of laboratory people that are conducting laboratory data. We can have geospatially informed questions like that are geared towards experts. What is the great group in this vicinity? What's the depth to redox? What components do you see? So there's a lot of way to kind of communicate and formalize information. And it could be easily done. This is an example that we dreamed up first of all, we'd have to kind of classify the users. You could develop a little smartphone app where you have to identify what you are, an NRCS staff, a cooperator, maybe a teacher, students. Yeah, I don't know, there could be all kinds of people that you could put on this list. But once they click on that, you've automatically classified or ranked their input data, right, based on who it's coming from. And you're probably, we would tailor the questions to the group, to that link. For example, if it's a teacher, you could possibly tailor the information to things that could be easily measured or described, like these. Maybe an NCSS scientist would be after to validate the great group in an area, or the depth to redox, or surface texture, or maybe chemical and physical properties. Who knows? There's a lot of opportunities there to expand what we know about soils, point data in space, and move forward in that increasing the or getting more resolution and less uncertainty. Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, you know, we've always thought about this in the wrong, possibly in the wrong way, in that, oh man, we're going to get all kinds of messy data, different sampling techniques. But nowadays, we can deal with that data in innovative ways. And so it doesn't have to make our maps, but we can still use it to guide questions, to refine our, to develop more hypotheses. It's good thing to build on. Yeah.
That's what I was going to follow up with and say. The smartphone app idea that you have, I think it's fantastic, but do you envision that as a two-way? Not just downloading the data, but enabling people to say, hey, I went to the field,
yes,
I saw something, let me report that.
Yes, that's exactly what we're thinking. It's a two-way kind of communication approach. For some, it's one way, and others groups, it could be two-way. Yeah, and, okay, that and labs, the same idea, it has proprietary information, but could we not take that proprietary information and upscale it, not divulge the location, but attach it to a map unit or a series, just so we have more data? We don't have to say where it came from. I don't know, I'm pretty naive about how you can use data like that, but gosh, it just seems like we could. And just simple agreements that we could make. So now we're moving on directly into relevance and intrinsic value. How can soil survey remain relevant and demonstrate intrinsic value? And I think we've made progress with these delivery tools that NRCS and my lab has made. I'm sure there are other labs that are making these same types of tools. And, you know, the idea is that they're making access to soil survey faster, easier to use. We're trying to cut through a lot of the scientific jargon when we have that opportunity so that we can really quickly route people to the information that they need. These are some of the apps that we have out right now, the Soil Web Earth, which is essentially Soil Web and Google Earth, and then Soil Web and Google Maps. We have the Series Extend Explorer, which I talked about yesterday. You can enter a soil series in the search field, and it maps its extent. Soil Properties app, which essentially is gridded soil survey in California to the 1 kilometer scale, to really kind of recognize that some people want to see properties in space. They don't want to drill down through these apps to see something. They want to see that particular property in space, so we made that app for them. And then the Data Explorer, which allows people to understand how these components relate to other soils. And so the idea behind these apps is to try to connect the map to how the soils in the map are related to one another, which would be in the center of the diagram, how the conceptual model is conceived, and that would be the block diagram, how these series relate to all other series in a soil survey area, in the upper left, all those dots, and how these soils relate to one another with depth. So that's the idea behind this suite of apps. And what I found in working with this, when we have them linked, when we have SoilWeb linked with the Series Extent Explorer and linked with the Soil Data Explorer, man, you are jumping back and forth between apps, and it is almost, I mean, it's almost a revolutionizing way to use Soil Survey. It is really fun and helpful. There are ways we can make this much better. We have to, the frustrating thing that I always encounter when I'm with my apps is as soon as I make it or we make it, it's already obsolete. It just, their shelf life is so short. And we have to always have that mindset that you are never done. We made this tool to deliver soil information, now we have to make it better. We have to keep pushing that forward. And we have to consider it from the eyes of non-soil scientists. I think that's really, really critical. We can't put on the soil science goggles to look at this information. We have to consider ourselves as Joe Public. Was it Joe Plummer? Or what was it? I think Joe Plummer? Okay.
And why is that?
Because I think our clientele, our advocates, the key to advocacy, widespread advocacy, is greater use of that information, or at least more people understand that soils are important, that soil survey is relevant to their lives. And so that's my perspective. If we can bring them in and let them understand the value of our product, then we have a greater potential for them to argue to their congressmen and women that this is an important tool, and we need this to solve our water quality problems. We need this to sustain agriculture. We can't. I feel that we can't just rely on the voice of our growers to lobby, personally. But, you know, I'm not in the trenches arguing for money for soil survey. This is just my opinion. So another step towards information delivery, we need to continue to just show soil survey in its current format. But we also need to continue to think of innovative ways, innovative decision support tools that are relevant to people's daily lives. And we just stumbled upon this one, and as I mentioned in the last talk on Monday, it is amazing how popular this was. It's really kind of a simple idea. What we created was an agricultural groundwater banking index. What we were trying to envision was a scenario. We were in the third consecutive year of drought in California, and we heard El Nino is coming, so massive floods could come to California. So could we envision a scenario where certain agricultural soils could receive managed floodwaters to recharge the groundwater that we are pumping like mad to compensate for the lack of surface water supplies in ag? So what soil landscapes are best suited to recharge our water? And it is unbelievable, the attention. I am like the rock star of California, and I don't mean this in a bragging way. I mean, interviews on the news, NPR, 50 magazines, Scientific American, I can't get people to stop calling me about this silly decision support tool. It's just, it resonated. Timing is everything in this perspective. We have to really be ready to react quickly, nimbly, to those societal problems that everybody is worried about and create these tools that then can be platforms for people to build on. And it's just been remarkable what this has done. Even had the Marijuana Growers magazine contact me about how marijuana growers can increase groundwater recharge in their soils. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. So I really think this is the key to the future, though, in terms of relevancy. You know, we have to dream up important interpretations and decision support tools. And you can never stop. So a soil interpretation engine might be a really nice way to facilitate this. And that goes back, I think, to your question. Could we take the interpretations and bring them out of NASIS I mean, you can keep them in NASA's too if you want, and make this kind of a library of scripts or software that are essentially interpretation engines for a variety of decision support tools, or are the building blocks, the ways in which people can build their own interpretations and make decision support tools. So we don't have to dream them up and build them ourselves. We have direct access to maybe a copy of NASIS, which is a much larger database than this was built. Our app was built from Sergo data. But the idea is to have some kind of controlled window into NASA so that we can build our own interpretation, so that we can test ideas, we can evaluate the sensitivity of those models by adding more and more different soil properties to see when that interpretation might blow up or what soil property might not be as meaningful in that decision. And that could then facilitate this idea of functional similarity of soils instead of a taxonomic similarity of soils. Could we not then begin to visualize soils in terms of how they function in a similar way, which is really what our clientele wants? Okay, so now we're going to get to the kind of corniness of the talk, I think. And, you know, demonstrate the beauty of soils. This sounds a little silly, but when you think about the public, we're kind of a vain species, I guess. You know, we cherish beautiful things. We want a beautiful house, we want a beautiful garden. What do we protect? We protect beautiful landscapes, national parks, and monuments. So what do you think? How many people actually think soils are beautiful? Not us, but outside of us. What, maybe 1% of the population? I mean, I can guarantee you I never thought of a soil growing up. And it was just by chance that I became a soil scientist. But if we can start to communicate and show, depict the beauty of soils, I think this could go a long way in terms of understanding the relevance and, more importantly, the intrinsic value of soils and the need to protect them and the need to understand them more. We also want to try to demonstrate the exceptionality of soils. And I think Daniel kind of hit on this on his talk about going after morphologic properties, not just saying that redoxymorphic features are there and the structure is prismatic. That means nothing to this group, this external group. And a lot of our interpretations don't even utilize that data. Let's show them these properties. How many of you were just totally bamboozled when you took your first soil morphology class? Did it just blow your minds? Come on. No?
Yeah.
All right. I mean, I just remember that first class I took, and I just, oh my God, this is a world that I never considered. And it's amazing. Not only do we have these amazing features, but they mean something, right? They tell us something about what's going on in the soil system that's relevant to our lives. How many people in the public do you think realize that? That we could look at features and then say what's going on about the landscape? Probably less than 1%. How could if we educated people on these things better, how could that not improve the understanding of soils to the public? I think it's critical. And so demonstrating the diversity of soils, equally valuable, right? With soil diversity comes diversity in ecosystem services. Those services are different across the globe, and it's a lot of, in large part, due to the diversity of soils. Could we not start to make claims that on specific soils, the soil in the middle supports a $1.5 billion beef industry in California. That soil on the right protects from storm surges, protects our cities from storm surges, starting to put a kind of a face to our soil landscapes. And then finally, to demonstrate how soils are part of landscapes, because I think this is what a lot of our scientific community does not get, that there is systematic variation in soils, and these landscape processes are what drive that variation. And so if we can kind of communicate that, I think we could go a long way in people maybe trusting our products, or at least wanting to learn more about our products. So how can we do that? I don't know. I mean, one thing that I thought of, or we thought of, was this kind of interactive soil image archive. This is just a kind of an interface that we dreamed up, where you have these point locations. We mandate that soil survey crews, part of their job is out there to document these properties that I just talked about, the beauty of soils, the morphology of soils, how they're connected to the landscapes, and connect those in creative ways through maps, through photos, whatever we can dream up, and then link them to an interactive map. This map is just kind of showing, it's Google Maps, you can see these points. That six means that there are six points behind that point. When you zoom up, the points explode, and you can click on that point and see the data. So if I clicked on this red dot, maybe a soil profile would show up, and maybe there was some content that would describe the relevance of that soil to the grape industry, or whatever important services that it provides. So trying to put, the idea is to put an identity to the soil besides just its name or its properties. Let's inform people about what these soils do and why they're important. So I'm kind of getting close to the end here. These are more some tidbits of, this might be one of my just pet peeves. Moving forward, we need to have soil landscape equality in our maps. And what I mean by that is we can't assume that a certain landscape is less important and therefore requires, or we can map it at a coarser scale. That's not fair. It's not fair to the soil landscape, we're not telling its story, and it's not fair to the users of that land whose land use is always changing, right? And so this is an example of that. You can see the cropland down at the bottom with high resolution of survey, and then the rangeland up above. You've got this massive polygon. And so what we're seeing in this rangeland is an encroachment of wine grapes. And so the soil survey is doing no good for that land use conversion. We're also seeing in California our rangelands circling massive mountains and calling that one complex. That information is not serving our ranchers in terms of people that have to develop ranch water quality plans to meet the regulations of the Water Quality Board. We have to be able to give them information at the same scale. That is the rule in California. Urbanization of prime farmland has pushed agriculture onto the margins. The less prime soils, class 3 and 4, and maybe 5, 6, and 7 for grapes, we don't have the information to support it. Kind of a similar idea, someone I think even brought it up. Oh, this fell here. Mapping equality across all land uses. Okay, so my perspective is, again, a big group of our advocates are going to be in urban areas. And I do a lot of extension to urban clients. And I can't tell you how excited they are to hear about soil survey and to play with soil survey in these applications. But then I go to their backyard and there's no data. You know, it's urban land complex. I mean, oh, God, is that a buzz killer or what? I mean, it's devastating. And I don't know what to tell them besides, hey, talk to your local NRCS office. Encourage them to start recording this information. And it gets back to your comment about scale. People, unfortunately, are going to want to know what's in their backyard in urban landscapes. That's a challenge. But we need to focus so much more effort on thinking about how we do these surveys. I'm not close to that world, but I think that we kind of did it a couple times. We figured out how we could do it, and then we kind of walked away and say, okay, this is how we're going to approach it. We need to continually be thinking about how we can develop a quality, usable product for urban clientele. I think that's critical. Yep. You need to think. That's but also the interpretations, the properties, you know, they want to know about contaminants, right? And that's a very touchy subject. But that doesn't mean we should just say, oh, we can't do that. It's too controversial. We need to think about it. Yeah. Oh, they certainly do. No, I'm not saying this is easy. It's not. There's a reason why there's no data in some of these. I mean, this is a headache. Right? But that doesn't mean we have to shy away from it. We just need to put more resources to it. And I ought to say, this visioning is visioning with unlimited resources. That's a, in my mind, that's the way you have to approach it, right? You have to approach it that way first. So, what could we accomplish with unlimited resources? That's kind of how I'm going to wrap this up. We have to showcase stratigraphy and soil-landscape relationships. That has to be at the forefront of all our products. And I'm a little concerned that that's a big task, a tall order. And, you know, I think some of the things that Sam and Brad talked about are good examples. Representative watersheds or soil survey areas where we can really start to build the case and value for this, you know, very transparent model that people can adopt to and adapt to. One of the ways in which we can kind of re-envision how we do soil survey is to adopt geophysical investigations. You know, I've used the, what is it, ground penetrating radar, and that dang thing has never worked for me once. And I know it works in places, but the geophysical experts, it is amazing what they can do. We've been working with them at the University of Wyoming. They call themselves YKIG, Wyoming, I forgot what they're called. Center for Environmental and Ecological Geophysics, thank you. These people are amazing. It's amazing what they can do. We're working down in the Southern Sierra Nevada CZO, and they came in and did some of this seismic refraction work for us. And our objective was to look at depth to bedrock. What we found from our work was that the soils were drying out in June, but the forests were transpiring year-round. And so, obviously, they're getting water from much deeper, below the soil, into the paralithic weathered bedrock material. We had very limited tool set to understand what was below the soil zone. And it kind of gets to what Doug talked about yesterday. We have to document what that stuff is, and there are a lot of ways in which we can do that. The geophysics work was remarkable in explaining not only the depth to hard bedrock, but they also helped us develop an understanding of porosity of those materials from their data. So we're able to quantify changes in porosity laterally and with depth, and totally allowed us to rethink how deep regolith contributes to the water balance. And that was work that Bob Graham has been talking about for years. So the tools that we can use to investigate this stuff are expensive, but I think we need to invest ourselves in a program for soil survey with experts that can do this for us. And then the last two slides, this kind of goes back to our virtual slide, what did I call it? I can't remember what I called it. It's virtual soil photo inventory. Well, I think beyond that, what we should be considering is like an information system for the lay person, right? I don't even know if this makes sense. Virtual National Soil Heritage Network, I don't know. Sorry about that. The idea is to create an interactive website that shows properties, photos, maps, soil survey products, but links it to the services that these individual soils provide. A massive amount of work, right? factoids about what these soil landscapes do in terms of filtering water, storing water, supporting our food and fiber production. All these concepts need to be woven in so that people can get that relevance of soil and understand why we map soils. FEAO has some nice material. I don't know if you've been there. They develop from the International Year of Soil, but they don't have any pictures of soil. They just have pictures of systems. So what I'm saying is we need to showcase the soils in this archive. So the last slide. These are just some of my suggestions for moving forward. We definitely need to get more morphologic data into digital format. We can do that by getting NASIS into allowing users to access NASIS in an easier way, getting that data into Surgo, so to speak. We've got to use more morphologic information, and we've got to create more digital formats of morphologic information. We need more lab analysis. We're working on that in a variety of ways. We need more boots on the ground to characterize that landscape model. That's the key to transparency of data, to resolving or getting finer and finer resolution products. We need to capitalize on emerging issues, societal issues. When we see something that's important that society cares about, we need to say, how can soil survey answer that question? We need to continue to ask ourselves, who is our clientele? Who will be our clientele? What are their needs? Not only what are their needs, but what are their wants? You know, there's a little bit different things. And then finally, we have to have a mindset of continually evolving delivery formats. Once those products are made, we need to go and make them better. We need to invest in that always, not just a one project deal. So that's what I have. We have. If you folks have any other questions, I'd love to, or discussion topics, love to hear them. Yeah. Yes. Well, so interestingly, me and other faculty at UC Davis had a discussion with, CEOs from Microsoft. And what we all kind of came to consensus around is that we train scientists, but we also train technologists. And those are two separate people. There are very, very few people that do both hardcore technology and are well-trained soil scientists. I think Dylan is one that comes to my mind, Dylan Baudet, as someone who has that beautiful marriage of intense knowledge of taxonomy, what he thinks he codes, right? I wish I could do that. I don't. I can't. But we need to find ways to train students. We can't just stumble across these people. We need training so that they are totally immersed in technology, yet completely grounded in our science. And we all agreed on that in that meeting, and maybe there will be future investments to do that.
So I think the list that you had at the previous slide was great. What I'm wondering about is, obviously, this is going to depend a lot on soil survey stats, right, that our CS folks engage. Mm-hmm. And then it comes down to what it costs for that.
Yeah.
Roots on the ground, those kind of things. I mean, the RCS folks that I talk to, yeah, they don't get to go to the field that much because they're doing a lot of
Well, like I said, I visioned with no money in mind. I think that's important. We need to set our goals separate from money, and then we need to start, approaching or itemizing what we can accomplish. But you're right. That's probably not, a lot of this is probably not realistic. We might be able to get around to some extent with the crowdsourcing idea, but that's not necessarily a solution for the big problems. So, but what I do think is advocacy is a very, very powerful tool. And so if we don't, look at NASA. I mean, people all relate to the significance of that. Why can't they relate to the significance of soil survey? Why can't we push more dollars towards our programs? That's, I guess that is the overarching theme of my my talk is, if you build it, they will come type, and they will then support you. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I was implying with more boots on the ground, is that there is a never-ending amount of field work out there. And you know, once you finish a product, a delivery product, that's the same for a soil survey product. That's my point. Showcase the uncertainty. You don't have to say, you don't have to show all of that craziness. I mean, we recently dug a 250-meter trench. We had originally seen that watershed with 100 pits. We thought we knew what was going on. And then we dug that trench, and we just shook our heads and walked away. We know nothing, all right? I don't care. We know nothing about some of these landscapes. If you have it. Yeah.
So, Tony, on your idea of bringing NRCS at the same level of NASA, I think that is a wonderful idea, truly. And I think NRCS can embrace that idea. But it should change its name. Because in NRCS, the word soil is being looked at.
Yeah, yeah.
So, it's an argument, actually.
Yeah. That's a great idea, though.
The idea of saying, oh, that's a target. Mm-hmm. Bring it. Because everybody knows now that nobody knows that. Nobody.
The soil I like that. The Soil Discovery Agency or Soil Discovery, I don't know. But I mean, I like it. It's a great idea. Yeah. But I think we want to, yeah.
I think you should send your efforts elsewhere.
Well, we could always give ourselves another name under a group. Yeah.
Based on the concept of relations as well. And the fact that
Is that really any different? We have map units that have 80% YOLO in them. How is that different?
Because
we don't even say where they are.
Yeah, which makes it harder. I think the transparency is good, but they're going to have a hard time shifting conceptually to a different way of explaining it and having to rewrite statutes, which is going to be a lengthy and burdensome process for a lot of them.
My experience with, and it's a little bit limited, but those people, don't even understand a map unit anyway. And it really often requires conversations from people like you and me to tell them what to get down into those plans. And so, I don't know. I think we could make it easier. I don't think it's a hurdle, but maybe. I don't know. I'm not writing them.
This one we're going to be talking about because we need a
I have that same experience with my colleagues. You know, at the university, they're very reluctant to use soil survey, you know, to develop, you know, science, to use decision support tools. And it requires sometimes an opportune moment to convince them, like the SAGB. Sorry, are we out of time, or are you? Okay.